killed by a single gunman. Here are some things to think about regarding violence against women in Canada.
On average, every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner.
Half of all women in Canada over the age of 16 have experienced at least one incident of physical or sexual violence.
1 in 10 women report that they have been stalked by someone in a way that made them fear for their life.
67% of all Canadians say they personally know at least one woman who has been sexually or physically assaulted.
More than 700 Indigenous women across Canada have gone missing or have been murdered in the last 2 decades as a result of violence.
Each year, over 40,000 arrests result from domestic violence. That's about 12% of all violent crime in Canada.
On any given day in Canada, more than 3,300 women, along with their 3,000 children, are forced to sleep in emergency shelters to escape domestic violence. Every night, about 200 women are turned away because the shelters are full.
Not all incidents of violence against women are reported to the police or the authorities, so these numbers, in reality, are much higher. This is a message from CFRU.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children. Victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and on Back in the USSR tonight, we're marking Remembrance Day in our own way by paying tribute to the victims of war. Whether that is the soldiers who were treated as cannon fodder by imperialist powers in the trenches of the First World War, or the mountains of Afghanistan, or the literally millions of civilians who have died in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Yugoslavia, Vietnam, Grenada, Cambodia, Somalia, Nicaragua, Syria, Palestine, Ireland, and too many other places that have been the victims of imperialist invasions and occupations in recent decades. I played Charlie Chaplin's iconic speech from his 1940 film, The Great Dictator, at the beginning of the show for a reason, because it conveys the vision of a future, a socialist future where war and exploitation have been overcome, where peace reigns supreme, and where working people control their own lives and destinies. This is a message that we must all take to heart now, in this country, as the government attempts to use recent tragedies to drive the country into new overseas wars in Iraq and Syria, encouraging Canadians to participate in the destruction of other countries, and presumably encouraging Canadian mining companies to take advantage of the resources under their soil. The slogan "Never Again" has been turned into a rallying cry for the slaughter of third world peoples. And no one who desires peace can accept this. More than ever, brothers and sisters, we must unite to stop war and advance peace and international solidarity among the nations and peoples of the world. We must fight not for the lies and for the myths of an idealized past, but for our vision of a world of peace and justice.
Yeah, boy. bonnes choses ne durent pas. Les grands hommes aussi, qu'ils viennent de Durban ou du royaume aussi. Ce n'est pas un fait nouveau depuis l'époque du Messie. Les hommes trop lucides sont ciblés, génocide. Le système n'aime pas ceux qui ont un sixième sens, car ils sont supposés avoir un troisième œil. On ne fera pas le deuil de ceux qui ont osé dire au péril de leur vie, refuser de mentir au nom de la dignité de la masse. Oppression des menaces, tenir le même discours, ça ne coupe pas les rues. Les hommes de cette carrure, ces hommes qui bravent tout sans armes et sans armure. Imagine la Turquie sans Ankara, ça en dit long, n'est-ce pas, je pense à Sankara. Les cerveaux du continent sont victimes de mascarades, victimes de balances qui s'en masquent. Sauvagement éliminé, l'Occident est tombé bas. Mais Patrice, ne t'en fais pas, l'Afrique ne t'oublie pas. Resteront éternels ceux qui mourront au combat. Indépendant comme le nom de son journal, il voulait qu'à son peuple il ne soit fait aucun mal. Norbert Zongo, c'est pour toi que ma plume vibre. Parti violemment pour avoir voulu une presse libre. Que vos âmes reposent en paix, que la terre vous soit légère.
Yawani Yamboudou la quest n'en guyant, y'a m'lougan y boulabo.
Contrairement à ce qu'il voulait, bourreau vous immortalise. On priera pour vous dans les mosquées, dans les églises. Je poursuis mon listing, Che Guevara, Gandhi, Luther King. Dans nos mémoires resteront toujours gravés comme Mandela, Malcolm X ou Marcus Garvey. À cette allure, le continent ne peut que sombrer, car ces militants sont tous en train de crever.
Yamlogadouni,
Nibunda,
Nibunda, Yamlogadouni, Nibunda,
Nibunda,
Nibunda, Nibunda, Nibunda, Nibunda,
listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Facile Combat, Burkinabe rapper with the song Martyrs. You know, talking about the many martyrs who have stood against and given their lives in the struggle against colonialism in Africa, which of course is something that most Canadians do not know the history of. You know, most Canadians do not understand what the Western world has actually done to the Third World over the course of the 20th century and to this day in the 21st. We are ignorant of that history. And just even seeing like the kind of way in which the, say something like the First World War is glorified in popular consciousness, where you actually see how in downtown Guelph, like in the square in downtown Guelph, just yesterday on Remembrance Day, they brought out basically artillery pieces, you know, and set them up in the square and had this whole like militaristic parade, gigantic Canadian flags, all this kind of stuff. There is no living soldier from the First World War to contradict the official message. You know the official message on the First World War. You know, the Canada was born as a nation under fire at Vimy Ridge, and it was this heroic thing, and like, you know, it's something that should be celebrated and honored and lionized and all this kind of stuff. And nobody's around who actually experienced the horrors of that war, which was probably one of the most nasty, brutal, wasteful, purposeless wars in human history. Nobody's around to contradict what Stephen Harper and the entire gang are saying on that. And that in itself is a tragedy. So, just to once again, I guess, maybe refresh your memory about what the First World War really was like, and to some extent what war is like in general, I'm going to recite Wilfred Owen, great British poet and soldier, Wilfred Owen's poem, Dulce et Decorum Est. Bent double like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through the sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and toward the distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep, many had lost their boots, but limped on bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of gas shells dropping softly behind. Gas! Gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes in thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, Dulce et decorum est pro patria mordi.
When I was a young man, I carried my pack, and I lived the free life of a rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time to stop rambling, 'cause there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun, and they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we sailed away from the quay. And amidst all the tears and the shouts and the cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. How well I remember that terrible day, when the blood stained the sand and the water. Well, how in that hell that they call Suvlavai, we were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turkey was ready, he primed himself well. He showered us with bullets and he rained us with shells. And in 5 minutes flat, he'd blown us all to hell. Nearly blew us right back to Australia. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we stopped to bury our slain. And we buried ours, and the Turks buried theirs, and it started all over again. Now those who were living did their best to survive in that mad world of death, blood and fire. And for 7 long weeks I kept myself alive, all the corpses around me piled higher. Then a big Turkish shell knocked me arse over tip. And when I awoke in my hospital bed and saw what it had done, Christ, I wished I was dead. Never knew there were worse things than dying. And no more I'll go waltzing Matilda to the green bushes so far and near, for to hang tens and pegs a man needs two legs. No more waltzing Matilda for me. So they collected the cripples, the wounded and maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. The legless, the armless, the blind and insane, those proud wounded heroes of Suvla. And as our ship pulled into Circular Quay, I looked at the place where me legs used to be. And thank Christ, there was nobody waiting for me to grieve and to mourn and to pity. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway. But nobody cheered, they just stood and stared, and they turned their faces away. And now every April I sit on my porch and I watch the parade pass before me. I see my own comrades, how proudly they march, reliving the dreams of past glory. I see the old men all twisted and torn,
the forgotten heroes of a forgotten war. And the young people ask me, what are they marching for? And I ask myself the same question. And the band plays Waltzing Matilda, and the old men still answer the call. But year after year, their numbers get fewer. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, ooh, go a waltzing Matilda with me.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU, and that, of course, was Shane McGowan and the Pogues with the band played Waltzing Matilda. Like, very, very powerful anti-war anthem, really. You know, talking about the real horrors of war, the First World War, the Gallipoli campaign in particular, and just how young life was literally just thrown away. It was cannon fodder. You know, to these generals and these commanders and, like, these really imperialists who were just, you know, made the war happen and were driving it and were actually profiting from it. If you talk about the bankers and the arms manufacturers and all those people, they were the ones who were making big bucks, while literally millions of people were just like being churned to gruel by their artillery and their machine guns and all this kind of stuff. You know, that's the real face of the First World War, and we need to remember what it was actually like. It's our responsibility to do that. It really is the only way we can respect the dead and really honor the dead, is to remember what they went through and to make sure that never happens again. And that we take a stand and make sure that wars of that scale, that kind of slaughter, are rejected. They know they don't happen again. We stop them. We unite. We come together. We make sure they don't happen again. And that's absolutely essential, because, of course, we see what's happening in our own time, with the kind of wars that are going on overseas, and like who's profiting from them and who's advancing them and who's dying in them. I mean, who's dying in them? So I want to play a clip right now about this is the testimony of a Iraqi civilian who now lives in the United States as a refugee. And this is what he said about like what the war that tore Iraq apart over the last 10 years did to his country and to his neighborhood and his family. And you'll see, once again, the horror of war as it is lived today.
Akram al-Zuhairi says it was March 17th, not the 20th, like the United States says, when he heard the first bombs rain over al-Dora, a town in Baghdad. After more than 8 years of war, al-Zuhairi says his homeland is unrecognizable.
Everything is destroyed. Everything, even the people. I mean, all the buildings and all the cities, it's destroyed, everything.
As a married father of four, he says that he's had to adjust to life in the U.S., knowing that he could never introduce his daughters or his son to the land he loved as a child.
When they occupy Iraq, the Americans do not know. I think that they do not know what they need exactly, just about the Saddam regimes and the weapons and something like that, and that's it.
As most of us already know, those weapons were never found. The U.S. spent more than $2 trillion trying to control the so-called threat coming from Iraq. An estimated 189,000 people died, thousands more injured. Akram says those numbers are small in comparison to what he believes are more than 1 million Iraqis killed in the 8 years of war with U.S.-led allied troops. Some of them were his family and friends.
Four friends they killed in Iraq, and my uncle also, and my neighborhood, I think they killed around 12 to 15 friends.
Akram al-Zuhairi was displaced from his Iraqi home in 2009. Since then, he's spent most of his time living in the United States with his family just outside of Washington, D.C. When he thinks about his homeland, he looks back on it with fond memories, with concerns for its future. The Iraqi refugee, who lives in a place he can't quite call home, says he's not sure when he'll return to his birthplace to confront a place he may not recognize.
You know, when I look about the Iraqi futures, I see the black. Maybe there is some gray, but all this is black.
Colin Campbell, Press TV, Washington.
You listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. And that, of course, was Nine Inch Nails with The Day the World Went Away. And, of course, what better song really to capture what that Iraqi man and so many thousands and thousands and thousands, like, of Iraqis experience, millions, actually, you know, given the number of displaced people in that country, the number of people who have displaced, number of people who have died, number of people who were maimed, or in other words, wise affected by that invasion, which took place in 2003, and the after effects, which went on for like years and are still going on now, you know, with the civil war that's going on in Iraq right now. You know, their world really did go away, and it still hasn't come back. That's what imperialism does. It destroys whole countries, rips them apart, rips apart the social fabric of communities, you know, just devastates. It destroys everything. And I want to play right now some testimony of some soldiers, American soldiers, who actually were in Iraq. And they're going to talk about their experience and just what that did to them and why they now oppose. They came to oppose that war. So please stay tuned.
My name is Camilo Mejia. I'm an Iraq War veteran and resistor. And I chair the board of directors at Iraq Veterans Against the War. And I want to take this opportunity to say to the members that it's been a true honor to be here with you and to meet many of you for the first time. Thank you all for coming. Thanks everyone for being here. This has been an immense success. We could not be happier than we are. I would like to start my remarks by saying that if you are a Vietnam veteran, a member of VVAW, and especially if you attended the first Winter Soldier investigation, please stand. There's a long history of resistance in our military, but it is because of your leadership and your strength and your resistance that we stand here today. Without your example, we would be pushing forward through darkness. It is with the torch that you passed on to us that we lead the way against an endless illegitimate occupation that is tearing apart our military and our country. Today is the last day of Winter Soldier Iraq and Afghanistan. But today also marks the birth of a new generation of Winter Soldiers. George Orwell once wrote, "In times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an act of rebellion." We live today in times of universal deceit. But throughout the past 4 days, we have witnessed firsthand accounts that challenge that universal deceit. Iraq Veterans Against the War has become a source of stress to the military, brass, and to the government. We have members who have been interrogated by the FBI. We have members sitting in this room who have been incarcerated for being conscientious objectors. We have been incarcerated for standing up to and saying no to command rape and sexual discrimination. We have members in Iraq Veterans Against the War who have been prosecuted for being publicly critical of our government's failed war policies. We have become a dangerous group of people, not because of our military training, but because we have dared to challenge the official story. Because of members of the military, we have dared to share our experiences. Because we have dared to think for ourselves. Because we have dared to analyze and be critical. Because we have dared to follow our conscience. Because we have dared to go beyond patriotism to embrace humanity. The service members and veterans who have shared our experiences with you and with the entire world are committing an act of resistance by being here. We resist the notion of free speech and democracy when the voices of those who have been the most affected by the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are being silenced by the government and by the corporate media. We refuse the notion of nation building in Iraq when our levees are breaking at home and our people are drowning, and when our own bridges are falling down. We resist and reject the official government rhetoric of support our troops when we have a whole new military generation returning home to no care for post-traumatic stress disorder, to homelessness, to disturbingly high levels of suicide, homicide, and domestic violence. We have heard heartbreaking testimony. We who have been there have seen the horror in the eyes of children whose doors we kicked down at 3 a.m. We have learned that to treat other people with humanity, we have to treat our own people with humanity. We cannot win the hearts and minds of any country until we win the hearts and minds of our own people, until we eradicate homophobia within our ranks, until we treat our own people as equals regardless of their gender or the color of their skin. You have heard our 3 points of unity. Immediate and unconditional withdrawal of all occupying forces. Full benefits to all military personnel. And reparations to the people of Iraq so they can rebuild their country on their own terms. We at IBAW are not going to rest until we achieve these 3 goals. As IBAW's longtime friend and advisor Stan Goff once said, we are still soldiers, which is not their soldiers anymore. We are your new winter soldiers. Thank you.
Don't believe in
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that, of course, was Canadian singer Bruce Cockburn with his song If I Had a Rocket Launcher. And before that, of course, we heard the testimony from the Winter Soldiers Conference against the war in Iraq, where, of course, Iraqi veterans of the Iraq War returned against the war, gave their testimony. And they spoke the truth of what was really going on, that, of course, was not being heard in the mainstream media by any means. They cut through the propaganda. They cut through the lies. They said what needed to be said, trying to wake people up to the reality of war. And it's essential that we listen when people do that, when people tell the truth about what's really going on. Because, of course, it is in the interest of the imperialists and the people who perpetuate these wars to conceal the horrendous truth of what war really is and what it means from the rest of us. You know, that's what they do. They do it in the media. They do it in the writing of history. They do it in just every avenue, every way you can think of. And that needs to be opposed. People need to take a stand. They need to unite and oppose war, even when it's very, very hard and there could be very severe repercussions for you if you do so. And of course, I can think of no better example of somebody who really took a stand against war and really was willing to pay the price for that, the stand that he took, than Martin Luther King, whose courageous stand against the Vietnam War totally alienated him from his organization, from the American government, from the civil rights activism in general. They virtually all turned against him because he took that stand, that principled stand against the war in Vietnam, and said this was wrong. And came up and just forcefully said, I'm against imperialism, I'm against war, I'm against armed intervention, killing people overseas, I'm against all this stuff, and we cannot defend this. If we are for civil rights, we have to be against war. And he was willing to alienate so many of his supporters by taking a stand like that. So, because he knew that that was the right thing to do. It had to be done. He had to take that stand. And that too often is forgotten when we think of Martin Luther King today. You know, I can't remember who said this, but there was one commentator who said, like, most Americans think that Dr. Martin Luther King only gave one speech. It was in 1963, the whole I Have a Dream speech and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like, you know, they don't hear anything about him until he gets assassinated. And of course, he did far more than that, you know, and developed over time, radicalized over time, and changed into a man who was really willing to take on the American government over its murderous foreign policy that it was pursuing in Indochina. Even when very few other people were willing to take that step, he was willing to. He paid the price for that. So I really want to play right now his speech, which he gave, I believe it was Ebenezer Baptist Church, when he told people why he was against the war in Vietnam. I'm going to play that for you right now, so please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
The time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. Now, I've chosen to preach about the war in Vietnam today because I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt. But the mission to which they call us is a most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does the human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom. There has never been such a monumental dissent during a war by the American people. Polls reveal that almost 15 million Americans explicitly oppose the war in Vietnam. Additional millions cannot bring themselves around to support it. This reveals that millions have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Now, of course, one of the difficulties in speaking out today grows out of the fact that there are those who are seeking to equate dissent with disloyalty. It's a dark day in our nation when high-level authorities will seek to use every method to silence dissent. Something is happening and people are not going to be silent. The truth must be told. And I say that those who are seeking to make it appear that anyone who opposes the war in Vietnam is a fool or a traitor or an enemy of our soldiers is a person who has taken a stand against the best in our tradition. Many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my path. Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King? Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. And so this morning I speak to you on this issue because I'm determined to take the gospel seriously. There is at the outset a very obvious and almost facile connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. Then came the build-up in Vietnam, and I watched the program broken as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor, so long as adventures like Vietnam continue to draw men and skills and money like some demonic, destructive suction tube. And you may not know it, my friends, but it is estimated that we spend $500,000 to kill each enemy soldier, while we spend only $53 for each person classified as poor. And much of that $53 goes for salaries to people who are not poor. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. Perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportion relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Holland.